From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. On his list of the top 10 albums of the year, NPR music critic Bob Boylan has two artists who died in 2016. Bob says David Bowie's last record, Black Star, was the perfect exit. In the song Lazarus, Bowie writes about looking down from heaven with scars that can't be seen. And Bob says it's a prescient song that seemed to foretell what was going to happen in 2016. Prince died, so did Merle Haggard, Ralph Stanley, and Leonard Cohen. His album is on Bob's list. It's deep and touching, and Bob says self-reflection was a theme in music this year. Today in the program, Bob Boylan is joining us to talk about some of his favorite music of the year. Not all of it is sad and haunting, by the way. There's lots of bright, joyous, funny music to talk about, too, which we will do when we come back from the news.
Support for Radio West comes from thousands of sustainers, listeners just like you who give ongoing monthly donations to help pay for the public radio shows they rely on. Show your love for Radio West by becoming a sustainer, starting at just $5 a month at KUER.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. So I promise we are not going to get too morose today as we talk music with NPR music critic Bob Boylan. But look, we have to say it. One of the things that seemed to define music this year was the number of great artists who died, like David Bowie, who had just released his last album, and Leonard Cohen, who died not long after releasing his. Prince, of course, died. The brilliant producer for the Beatles, George Martin, died. Merle Haggard, Ralph Stanley. Charles Bradley was one of Bob Boylan's favorite songs of the year. Now, he's still alive. The song that Bob really likes is about his mother, and it's sad and beautiful, but it's taken on a new meaning now that he's been diagnosed, Charles Bradley has, with cancer this year. But we have to say, there was a lot of music made this year that is joyous and trippy and funny and happy. It's music, so we're going to be all over the map today. Bob Boylan is joining us to talk about the year in music, so we'll play as much as we can. Bob is back with us, the creator, of course, and host of NPR's All Songs Considered and the Tiny Desk concerts that you probably watch all the time. He has a book, if you didn't know, which we'll have him on to talk about at some point, called Your Song Changed My Life. It came out earlier this year. I'll also say we have a link to the full list of the top 10 albums of the year and a list of Bob's favorites, all on our website, radiowest.org. Bob's joining us from the studios of NPR in Washington. And Bob, welcome back. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Doug. Good to be here.
So what is this? So I guess let's get the idea of all the deaths out of the way.
We're going to do grim. We're going to start grim.
Well, I guess we should. Is grim the word?
Well, certainly sad. I mean,
yeah, sad.
It's sad, but here's what's beautiful, okay? When David Bowie, which started off this year, 2016, put out his record, he put it out on his 69th birthday. Yep. We didn't know how sick he was, yeah. Liver cancer. And listening to that record for the first couple of days that I had it before we learned that he passed away, the album had one kind of meaning to it. After he died, the album had it took on the intention that he felt and wrote about. We'll jump later to Leonard Cohen, but they both of them were writing records when they knew it was going to be their last record. And what masterful songwriters these are to take on such a subject.
Yeah. Say something about David Bowie. So his album was Black Star, and he had always wanted to make a record with a big band, and he found this great jazz band in New York.
Yeah.
This is Donny McCaslin's band.
Right. So he was working with Maria Schneider, another great arranger, composer, and got turned on to and did a song with her called Sue, which is a version of is on the current record. But, Bowie has always had this lineage of jazz running through his records, whether it's obvious or not. But if you go back to, 1974 with a record called Aladdin Sane, there's this crazy piano going on that's discordant and kind of adds all this tension to the music. And Mick Garson, who is the piano player there, was someone who Bowie loved and had jazz at his roots. And so Bowie finally just basically, he took a jazz band and tried to not tried to, but put them in a rock format.
Yeah.
And so you get both of the melodic nature of jazz, beautiful saxes and so forth, and but the spacious and openness that can also be in jazz. But then you get the force, that magic David Bowie force that's certainly got rock to it.
There are two songs I wanted to – I want to start with Lazarus, if we could, because I think the lyrics, I wrote down some of the lyrics. Look up here, I'm in heaven. I've got scars that can't be seen. I've got drama can't be stolen. Everyone knows but me. I mean, listening to it, you get a sense that there was, I don't know, some, and there's a sense of where he says, I'll be free. I don't know, there's something really sad, but also
there's
something
great
beautiful.
Intention yeah. in the, yeah, there's yeah. real great intention yeah. in this.
Here's Lazarus. This is from Black Star.
Look up here, I'm in heaven. I've got scars that can't be seen. I've got drama, can't be stolen. Everybody knows me now.
It's worth noting that Bowie, in 2015, the end of 2015, finished a musical called Lazarus
yeah.
on stage. He had played a character Bowie had based on a Walter Tevis novel called The Man Who Fell to Earth. He played this character who lands on Earth, an alien lands on Earth,
yeah.
hoping to save his planet, winds up turning out to be a sort of a lone drunkard on Earth and unable to get back home. This character that he portrayed is the subject matter for the play Lazarus. Mm-hmm. And so some of the characters, some of the ideas that are in that play fall into the song. But it's sort of all about alienation and life and finding a place in life.
The band had no idea how sick he was.
That's what I'm told. We interviewed Donnie McCaslin and his longtime partner, Tony Visconti, back in December when we had a hint of the album. We had a song or two. And then later, talking to Donnie, they'd go to work 11 to 4 and play and really had not a sense of where he was. Bowie seemed strong. But maybe it was a limited hours that made it possible for him to seem strong. But he was certain, but very driven to finish this record.
And legitimately on your list of top 10. Like not just this is David Bowie. I'll take into account his life of brilliant music. But like this is an album that belongs there anyway?
Totally.
Yeah.
We all, as songwriters and musicians and artists, try to find something to express, and the good artists make the best out of finding something to express. Well, what could be more powerful than that big deadline in the sky, that idea that you have one more shot at doing something, and you take an artist like Bowie, who has been in my top 10 list over the past 10 years. He's made great records over his career. This is his 25th. They never sold all that well. This one did, yeah. And maybe perhaps because of his death. But no, this is legitimate.
It's called Black Star. Let's talk about Bon Iver. You talked about like being really surprised by this album, and you've talked about being conflicted. Like you love it, but then you miss Justin Vernon's voice. This is a different kind of album. Talk about Bon Iver. It's called 22 a Million.
Yeah, cryptic record. Everything from the titling, the way the titles are written. For those who don't know who this person is, the quick and dirty of it is he made an album that's probably, what, 8 years old or so, mm-hmm. that captured people's hearts by basically finding himself in a cabin and making a record that was very personal, made it mostly himself on a multi-track home recorder. And so at the heart of that record was his voice and these very, very personal songs. He has tried hard to, like, dig himself out of mm-hmm. something that he created,
yeah.
to find ways of stretching his bounds as an artist, and where many artists will sort of make the same record their whole life or have two versions of the record they make their whole life. He is trying to reinvent himself, and he's worked certainly with lots and lots of other artists and doing projects and so forth. And this one takes that beautiful voice and completely masks it mm-hmm. in voice processing, which is, you know, so much of what music is about anymore. It can drive me up a wall, but it can also be used as an expression to enhance what you're after. So what drives me up the wall about vocal processing is that often the effect doesn't feel at all connected with the emotion of the music, or yeah. it doesn't add to it. It just is.
Yeah.
And you can like it for its novelty's sake, and that's a-okay. But in terms of, like, songwriting and creativity, it's like, why is that person singing like the Chipmunks? and so that happened somewhat on the Bon Iver record. But for the most part, there's so much that is fragile. It might be over soon as a word that you hear, a phrase that you hear on this record, which is that idea that, you know, life is, as we've certainly seen time and time again in 2016, life is fragile, and it all might be over soon. And the fragility that is in the songwriting and in the words comes out in that broken up voice that happens. And so there's a nice connection, and it serves the song. Maybe we should give a listen to it.
Yeah.
Those who haven't heard
this is the first song on the album, 22
right.
Over Soon. It's written out in kind of funky ways. All the titles are funky like that. Here it is. This is Bon Iver's album, 22, A Million. It's great. You know, I have to say, what I love about it is there's just enough of Vernon's voice in it for that kind of familiarity, and then it just spins off. And so I really...
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, yeah.
It took me a bit. I'm not going to lie.
Right.
But you give an artist like this who's made such brilliant stuff, cut him a little more slack, spend more time with it. It's harder and harder, not just because... I get lots of music, but I think it's harder and harder for anyone
yeah.
to listen to the same music over and over again. There, because, you know, for $10 a month,
yep.
you can have everything.
Yep. It's true.
And so it's hard to stay focused.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And so I don't know about you, but when I was a kid growing up, I always listened to my favorite record, you know, probably an album. I'd probably listen to a favorite album 10, 12 times a week.
Yeah.
For goodness sake,
yeah.
you know, and 10, 12 times a year, maybe more like it anymore.
Yeah.
For a fave.
Here's the anti-serum to the anti-serum to all the overused vocal processing. This is Adam Torres. This is what you wrote, Bob. You said that hearing so many of these affected voices did for you this year was kind of make you retreat to something that was more pure. And that's what you get with Adam Torres?
Boy, what what a voice.
Yeah.
Yes, Adam Torres is a singer who I never heard of before. He put out a record 10 years ago that, as I became more and more enamored by Adam Torres, I learned was for some this cult classic album.
Yeah.
He hadn't made a record since. He moved, was living in Athens, Ohio, moved to South America, and eventually wound up doing water conservation work in Austin, Texas, but has been writing songs all the while. And he made this quite remarkable record that we're going to play, Juniper Arms, I think.
Yeah.
Let's give people a taste of it and see what I mean. Contrast this to what you heard with Justin Vernon. Listen to Adam Torres.
Yeah, totally. I know exactly
so I'm a musician and I do lots of production and stuff. And one of the things I like to do with is mess with the voice. And I understand and have a love for voice processing and have used it plenty. The thing is that how it works in 20 seconds or less is that basically it takes a voice and then finds different frequencies or parts of the voice and enhances them, elongates them, or distorts them, or does something to them, right?
Yeah.
And so it literally follows what the singer's doing. What happens here is that Aisha Burns on that violin is in some ways doing what voice processing does. In other words, she's following Adam singing, that purity of his singing, but she adds something that no vocal processor is going to do, and that is like this element, this organic element, and that enriches what Adam's gorgeous voice is doing. I can't say enough. I've seen them play live, and there's a tiny desk with them that really, really illustrates that collaboration even more beautifully.
It's Adam Torres. It's Pearls to Swine. And I have to say, I was thinking, you know, you probably meet a lot of musicians who do really well at first and then things don't quite settle in. I think Adam's sort of his life is a good story for all those who have, you know, put their music on a shelf for a time. As you said, he went to South America for a while, went to grad school. You can come back, you know, just don't ditch those songs. You could, right?
Yeah, good thing. And I think, and we may talk about this more or we talk about it now, when I was a kid, and I'm a child of the, born in the 50s, grew up in 60s and 70s music as the heart of my teen and 20s. And at that point in my life, I was sure that any artist who turned about 33 was done for, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that was it. You'd had it. You were just, you got to be kidding me, trying to make quote-unquote rock music. And what's happened this year has pointed out how wrong that 20-year-old brain thought, which is that you had a 25th album by David Bowie that was brilliant. And we had a pure genius record from Leonard Cohen, his final one, which we may talk more about.
Yeah, we will.
And then about his 14th or so. And then Paul Simon made an absolutely brilliant, well, maybe his last record, but not for health reasons. But Paul Simon, when we did an interview earlier this year, mentioned that he was looking to see what would happen if he put his creative talent somewhere else.
Yeah.
But point being is that there's more to making great music than being a quote-unquote pop artist. In other words, just express. You can. It's accepted. There's a big world out there for you to play to, and don't stop making music.
Simon's album is Stranger to Stranger. You've called it masterful. This is another one that he doesn't just get in there because he's Paul Simon. You legit put him on your top 10 this year.
Absolutely. Yeah. This record, I think, like almost every Paul Simon record, frankly. So I think he's a national treasure, Paul Simon is. I mean, I don't know if we're going to play the werewolf,
yeah,
but if we do,
yeah, yeah.
It starts off, first of all, with this weird Indian instrument that I can barely, it's one string. You pluck it and it goes wah, 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 by just squeezing it. It's kind of like a big washtub bass or something, but in the palm of your hand. So this sound inspired him it sounded to him like the word werewolf. So he started to write a song about the werewolf. But even just the percussion, how do I do percussion? Well, you'd think somebody who's writing records, making records for so long would get a drummer and just start a beat. Well, he gets I'm going to get a flamenco dancer or two,
right.
And I'm going to mic the floor, and I'm going to take that and sample it, and I'm going to take that and shape the sample of it and make a loop of it and then write a song over it. And so that creative juice that he has, he works everything till it's down to its minimum and bare, and it's perfect.
Yeah.
And this whole record did that. So let's play Werewolf.
Yeah. Say something about it's about being afraid of the kind of the future. It's a fear of culture, the song.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on how you want to draw right. The analogy of werewolf. That's how I certainly took it.
Yeah. All right, here it is from Paul Simon's new album, Stranger to Stranger.
Werewolf.
Milwaukee man led a fairly decent life, made a fairly decent living, had a fairly decent wife. She killed him, sushi knife. Now they're shopping for a fairly decent afterlife. The werewolf is coming. Most old bits are mixed reviews. Life is a lottery. A lot of people lose. And the winners, the grinners with money-colored eyes, eat all the nuggets, then they order extra fries. Woo!
And then the song breaks eventually into a pipe organ. Yeah, yeah. It's really just...
It's great.
Yeah.
All right, before we go to a break, I want to play a song that you've said kind of reminds you a bit of Paul Simon. This is
Are we going to do River Wireless?
Yeah, is that all right?
Yeah, yeah.
This is a band from, I guess they're from Asheville, North Carolina. It's their second album. I was seeing the Tiny Desk concert they did for you. They used a typewriter for rhythm.
Yes.
So they're great.
They really are a creative bunch, and they have a bunch of different songwriters, which gives all of the songs different flavors. And there's something in their pop sensibility that really does remind me of Paul Simon.
The album is We All the Light, and this is Baby Brother. I bleeped the curse word, if you're worried about that, Bob, by the way.
Good.
Yeah.
Talk to God in the morning when you're sober. You can talk to me when you're all f***ed up tonight. Now I know I'm not the best at healing eyes, but it's all share my floors with you. We are all I have, and I share my floors with you.
You hear the Paul Simon there?
Totally.
Yeah, right? Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
And there's not just drums and banjo or whatever, but there's cellos, there's toy pianos, there's a nice droney sound of a harmonium going on there. So much goodness in the music of River Wireless. If you don't know them, I highly recommend.
Yeah. We All the Light is the name of the album. Bob Boylan is with us, host and creator of NPR's All Songs Considered, the Tiny Desk Concerts. He's the author of the book, by the way, Your Song Changed My Life. It came out earlier this year. We have a list of all of these songs and albums on our website, radiowest.org. We'll take a break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, NPR music critic Bob Boylan is back with us to play some of the best music of the year. And a lot of the albums he has on the top of his list come from musicians just starting out their careers, second albums, first albums. But Bob says he was surprised a lot of the best music of the year came from musicians who have been doing this a long time. He has David Bowie in here, of course, and Leonard Cohen and Paul Simon we just heard. No one's really better at sifting through all of the music of the year and making sense of it than Bob Boylan, so he's with us, host and creator of All Songs Considered. He has a book called Your Song Changed My Life, which I want to have you on and talk about.
Happy to.
Yeah.
It was a fun ride. 35 musicians talk about a song that changed them.
Yeah. You know, while we're on it, would you say something about George Martin? Because A Day in the Life is one of the songs that I think, if I have that right, sort of changed your life.
I was a 14-year-old kid when Sgt. Pepper came out, and without going to deep detail, just understand that music was basically drums, bass, guitar before there was a lot more piano, before the British invasion came along. They were simple songs, more often about love than not. Songs of protest were certainly starting to happen, and music was getting a little more complicated, but not musically. You know what I mean? It was the subject matter was starting to get a little deeper, more complicated. But when, Revolver and certainly then Sgt. Pepper came out, one of the things that happened was that orchestration, arrangement became a way to shake up the norm in music. Technology also made it more possible to do things in music that you couldn't do before. And one thing that John Lennon asked of George Martin, who is the Beatles producer, was to try to imagine the end of the world in music. And George Martin got an orchestra and made this credible crescendo, then recorded it again, and then recorded it again, and recorded it again, and layered these things together and mixed it. And if you listen to the song A Day in the Life, that is the genius that happens in that song. Might we have that cued?
Yeah.
That we can play, and then I'll talk more. So this song does a couple of things. That orchestration was just a small part of what is about to happen later as the song builds. But the very first part of the song, this isn't new music for 2016, but one of the things that happens at the beginning of that song is that John Lennon talks about a wealthy man who dies in a car crash, just suddenly loses his life. And then Paul McCartney's part of the song basically talks about the mundane and everyday life. And the glue is George Martin and what changed my life about those songs. That song was about what music can be. It can speak to life. It can speak to the fragility of life. And then musically, it can just hit you over the head and do things you've never heard or imagined. So, and I still look for that stuff in music every day still, thanks to George Martin. And he died at he lived a good long life. And what a creative.
Yeah. Let's talk about an album. This is one that you've said that you, I think, may have listened to more than any other this year. This is an album called Masterpiece, a band called Big Thief. They're from, I think, Brooklyn, aren't they?
These days, yeah, based in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
So more in the past, the two main people in this band, Adrian Lenker and Buck Meek, who's a guitarist, made more quiet and whispery music, and they added a lot of heft to what they do, and I just plain enjoyed these songs so much. And you know, there's lots of music that you listen to in private, and I think of the Bowie record as something that I do.
Yeah.
But there's the stuff I will listen to when I'm around friends and stuff. This was one of the ones. It felt listener friendly. You want to play not the lead-off track, but the title track for this Masterpiece by Big Thief?
Yes.
Great.
Years, days, makes no difference to me.
Loved this album. You said it was just about perfect, is how you put it.
And I think they strive for perfection. I think that there's nothing extra in these songs. They're not let's see what happens songs. They are truly worked through, and they are just those climactic moments on the song feel so well directed. And her voice, Adrian Lenker's voice, it is a kind of one of those perfect voices for the music they make. Love it.
I want to play, I loved this song, and this is one of those songs that we were talking earlier that has taken on kind of a new meaning, and this is Charles Bradley's song changes from the album changes. I thought this was so beautiful, and I think his story is just amazing. I mean, he was what was he? He was sort of a James Brown impersonator.
Exactly, right?
Yeah.
And didn't think he was going to wind up adding up to much of anything. But Charles Bradley has put out in the last few years some albums that have just captured the ears and of so many people. They feel original, like all that training of acting like James Brown has really come into play. He's got a voice that's marvelous, and we've learned he has stomach cancer. We hope he makes it, but you know, he's got the Otis in him.
He does, and this is a song. I guess he had this falling out with his mother, and then he comes back in life and reconnects to her and changes is about her. I mean, she passed away shortly after mm-hmm. this was recorded, but now, listening to it, knowing that he's looking at his own mortality, it seems to have taken on another life, I think. Let's play some of Charles Bradley's song. It's called Changes.
I feel unhappy. I feel so sad. That I ever had. She was my woman. I love her so. But it's too late now. I let her go. I'm going through change.
I mean, he had quite a troubled life. And when he went back to move and live with his mom in the late 90s, his brother was killed sort of down the road from where they were while he was, he was making his living as Black Velvet, the James Brown impersonator. But I'm so glad there was a documentary made of his life, which if you haven't seen, absolutely worth seeing. He ran into he met Gabriel Kaplan, who does great R&B in New York under the Daptones.
Yeah.
Anyway, see this guy live if you can, if you have the opportunity to. He's really quite a showman and puts all his heart and soul in what he does.
Saw this tweet a while back from All Songs Considered that said, Bob cannot stop listening to Angelica Garcia's raucous blues rock track, Orange Flower.
Oh, it's time for a laugh.
Right?
You know, let's just do it. And we can talk about her.
He gave me an orange flower. What in the hell does that mean? Am I halfway to red and halfway to yellow? Am I his mother or his lover or someone in the middle? Oh.
You don't want to stop this, do you?
I don't really. I'm so sorry. You know, it's 20s. You know, you're 20 years old. You're angst and stuff. And what? Let me call me dude the next day. There are lines that just make me smile. And the song, musically, it's really good. There's another shift that's happening underneath here. She's an artist who grew up in California, Hispanic heritage, moved, her family moved to Virginia, and she knew no one. She holed herself up in a room, basically, and just started writing music. And I think she's got a really good, a singular voice. There's nothing, she's not trying to make current pop music, but I think what pours out of her is music that feels kind of universal to me.
Yeah.
And funny.
And funny. Well, this might be a good segue into Lucy Dacus.
Oh, please. I Don't Want to Be Funny Anymore is a great song of Lucy Dacus.
Yeah. Well, let's play that song. I guess the connection here, at least I was thinking, was they're both from, well,
they're both
Angelica,
growing up in Richmond.
Yeah, they're in Virginia, they're in Richmond.
Virginia.
Yeah, like, must be quite a music scene there.
I didn't know they knew each other until last week when I saw Angelica play in a very different part of Virginia, closer to Washington, and she told me that her and Lucy were friends, and I've been such a lover of Lucy's, and then they shot a picture and sent it to me a couple of days later because they hang out together, and it's really, they're, I don't know much about the scene in Richmond, Virginia, but I now want to find out.
Yeah, right. Lucy's, she's 21, adopted child, but her mother's a piano player. What do we know about her?
What brings me to her music is her voice. I want you to listen to the sort of quality in her voice. It feels like an older voice here. Yeah. It feels like I'd be comfortable hearing this record out of if anybody knows what this is, a wind-up 78, you know, with a big horn. It just doesn't feel like a lot of singers, even the ones I love, even the Margaret Glaspies or the more popular, mine's drawing a blank, artists who are making music under the sort of rubric of folky, rocky music. Mm-hmm. They don't sound like Lucy. Lucy just sounds aged in a beautiful way.
Her album is called No Burden. This is I Don't Want to Be Funny Anymore.
I don't want to be funny anymore. Man, I heard my friends saying things I don't mean out loud.
I always want to play the whole thing. It's like only 2:45. It's not that long a song.
I'm good for that. If people can imagine a different instrumentation and think Billie Holiday for a minute, I know it might be a stretch, but the richness in her voice, different song, different sort of music, but listen to the rest.
Okay. We'll take a break. As we do, Bob Boylan is with us. We have a list of all of these songs on our website, radiowest.org. Back in a moment. This is Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio, back with Bob Boylan, host, creator of NPR's All Songs Considered and the Tiny Desk Concerts. He has a book called Your Song Changed My Life, which came out earlier this year. By the way, we have a list of all of Bob's favorites and all of the songs we're talking about today on our website, radiowest.org. Let's talk about Leonard Cohen. You say this is like you've written that like not all of Cohen's albums were terrific. This is great, right? I mean, this is a really good album.
It really is. I spent, after the day I learned Leonard Cohen died, I spent the next 2 days listening to all of his records in succession.
Wow.
And there are some real clunker of albums in terms of production, but songwriting, he was always really a great songwriter. So maybe the instrumentation was, you know, 1980s or 90s synth and overblown, in my opinion, not his, because he did them.
Yeah.
But, he embraced them. But the songwriting was always, always strong. But the last three records, the last three albums he's made have been brilliant. And this one, knowing he's going to pass, that this was going to be his last record, he even says, he sings out to the Lord if we play the title track. He says, I'm ready. I'm ready, Lord. And his son, Adam Cohen, who's a great musician in his own, produced his father's last words. And I don't know about you, but if anybody who has a connection with their parents, imagining trying to help them do their final vision, make their final vision, because you know it's the end, I just don't even imagine how one does that. Anyway, it's a brilliant, brilliant record.
If you are the dealer, I'm out of the game. If you are the healer, means I'm broken and lame. If thine is the glory, then mine must be the shame. You want it darker, we kill the flame. Magnified, sanctified be thy holy name. Vilified, crucified in the human frame. A million candles burning for the help that never came. You want it darker,
you know, Bob, his voice, you know, Johnny Cash's last, he had that just that voice. And I get that in the Leonard Cohen thing. Like, it's just, I mean, it's always been dark and sort of foreboding, but there was something else in it in this last one.
Yeah, really. I always joke that his next record, which I thought would be this one, but then if there were a next record, it would be so subsonic that you wouldn't even hear his voice anymore. It'd just go deeper.
Like only elephants
and
could
deeper.
Hear it.
Deeper, yeah, right.
Yeah. Let's talk about Jay Bartel as we're sort of running out of time. This is a song called Tuesdays.
I think of a young Leonard Cohen, the Leonard Cohen I listened to in, you know, 67, 8, and 9. And when I hear Jay Bartel, it really, and this came out before the Leonard Cohen record, but it made me think about Leonard. Mm-hmm. Let's play just a bit because we don't have a lot of time.
Yeah.
Just get a tone of this, storytelling-wise, voice-wise.
Tuesday, when I was a child and my mother came home from the hospital.
Totally a young Leonard Cohen. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm reading, right? Yeah.
Exactly. I would highly recommend, if you don't know, is J-A-Y-E, Jay Bartel. The record's called Tuesdays. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's get to what I think is your favorite of the year. This is Car Seat Headrest.
Not Beyonce.
Not Beyonce. You didn't pick Lemonade.
I think it's
a classic. We don't know how much we need to say about
right. No, I think admiration deep.
Yeah.
Connection not. Right. So it's fine. I mean, you don't have to love it, everything out there. Anyway, but I did love somebody who has made a dozen records and he's like 20, I don't know.
24, I think.
4 years old, yeah. 20. Yeah. His name is Will Toledo. He goes under the name Car Seat Headrest, a really stupid name.
Yeah. Yeah.
but he did it. It's the reason was he made much of his vocal tracks and stuff in the back seat of his parents' car, I guess self-conscious or being able to be expressive or whatever it might be. And this record that he made, which is his first major label record, the first one I had ever heard, really, is just full of, you know, maybe it's a dozen songs, but in each and every one of the songs, there's four or five different movements within a song, and but it's basic rock. There's no, you know, the vocal processing is not there. If you just love kind of rock that is guitar-based rock record, I really highly recommend this record.
I just want to underline something. You say this may be one of the best rock records of the century so far, and maybe the top 10 rock records ever made? Did you mean that?
I do mean that, but I mean that in terms of like guitar-based drum rock record, not just like the, because rock encompasses so much. But I listened to Television's record from, you know, the late 70s that people hold up as one of the great rock records of all time, and this is that. I mean, what I mean by that is this is equally on par, if not even more elaborate and amazing. On every listen, gives you so much more.
I want to hear some of it. We're essentially out of time, but let's hear a little bit when we can come back, and you can say some sort of final thing. But this is the song Vincent from the album Teens of Denial. You've talked about how there are like 5 different songs or 10 different songs in every song. Like it goes all over.
Oh yeah, this is not even the entree to the entree. You know what I mean? You're not even getting the yogurt in the really complicated Indian dish there. So it's really brilliant music. But saying it's brilliant music doesn't mean anything if it doesn't touch you. And I highly just suggest giving Teens of Denial, giving Car Seat Headrest a listen.
It's Bob Boylan, host and creator of NPR's All Songs Considered and the Tiny Desk Concerts. His book, by the way, is Your Song Changed My Life. He joined us from the studios of NPR in Washington. Bob, thank you very much for taking the time.
My pleasure. Thanks. Happy New Year.
You too.
Cheers.
Radio West, a production of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.